Hey, Scott, how are you doing?
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world. And we speak with those people who make our world more just and make it more compassionate. We kind of just say, just do it. Love God, love yourself, love your neighbor, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. This is the week in which we kind of talk with people about a variety of topics. And we're talking with people who this week who have some relationship in some way to the Pope's visit to the United States. And we speak with those people who have actually been present at some event with the Pope and some who kind of covered it. So we're going to speak with Tom Ertz in a few minutes, who is the Vice President of Operations at ShopRite Supermarkets, who was with event with Pope Francis in East Harlem. And then a little bit later on in the show, we're going to speak with David Gibson, who is a journalist who covered a lot of it and is a national reporter at Religious News Services. So before we get to that, Tom, any news that you have for us?
Sherman's here. One of the things I think many things were covered about the Pope's visit. But one of the things that I would like to wind up talking about is the fact that there's one thing that may not have been covered is Pope Francis, when he made his swing here through the United States and through Cuba, did receive an international tangible result in the sense that Colombian President Juan Santos and the leader of the rebels in Colombia, FARC leader Rodrigo Lindero, announced just this past week while the Pope was here a definitive peace agreement that they will undertake within 6 months that's going to end the 51-year civil war in that country. It's something that the Pope has been working on since June. He actually had a meeting with President Juan Santos at that time about 6 months ago, and he had said that if the peace initiative was undertaken, he might be going to Colombia. So we may be hearing that Pope Francis may be heading to Colombia within the next few months.
Well, you know, very interesting. When we talk about the world refugee crises, and we talk both about those individuals who are internally displaced and those who are refugees, and the distinction is pretty simple. So an internally displaced person is somebody who has to leave their home because of violence, persecution, or some other reason, but they don't cross a border. So they go to another part of their own country. So, I mean, just to use an analogy, it'd be, you know, somebody from Texas who maybe had to relocate to Michigan. That would be an internally displaced person. But if the person from Texas was displaced and wound up going to Mexico, Central America, then that person would be a refugee. So that's the difference. They're still displaced. It's just they don't cross a national border. And interestingly, Colombia is one of those places that has 6 million people who have been displaced. Wow. Because of the drug wars over the past year. So it is an incredibly significant turmoil, causing a lot of hardship, causing a lot of violence, causing a lot of disruption. And so it's very, very good news that it's seemingly that maybe there's going to be some diminution, decrease in that violence, and hopefully greater kind of peace and calm and order in that situation. So that is good news. That is one, you know, real, you know, positive result of you know, the hopefully the Pope's visit to the Americas. So, Tom, any other piece of news?
Well, you mentioned the refugee situation, Monsignor, and one thing kind of came up. You know, I know we always talk about how people we try to do good works through not just, let's say, their religious life, but even their business life. Very interestingly, just this past week, a German company by the name of Mutinox declined an order from the Hungarian government for hundreds of yards and miles of razor wire. Now, this company produces this razor wire in order to be able to, so people could protect their property. But the Hungarian government had reached out to them to be able to put this razor wire over 10 miles of a border that they share with Serbia. And the CEO of Mutinox, by the name of Tala Denger, basically refused Hungary's order because razor wire is far more dangerous than barbed wire. Razor wire can actually, from the cuts you get trying to go through it, you can actually die. And the CEO at that time refused the order, costing him probably about €500,000. And he said Hungary is misusing razor wire, so and they're just taking it stride that people could be hurt or even die from it, so we will not fulfill this order. So in a sense, this man said, I will not make this €500,000 at the expense of these refugees who are fleeing.
That's very interesting. And, it there's a parallel issue because with the Pope's visit, there has been a lot of conversation. We'll talk with David Gibson about this a little bit later on in the show. There's been conversation about the death penalty. Mm-hmm. And I think, if my memory serves me right, one of the issues that has been occurring in the United States is in recent years, which to me is incomprehensible. Okay, let me just say it this way. But the issue is the following, is that apparently it's getting harder and harder for prisons and states with the death penalty to get the drugs to do kind of the fatal injection of the death dealing drugs, because I think some of them may come from Europe, and it's been harder to get those. So it's an intriguing piece, and I think it's a very, very important kind of footnote. And if I want to be a little bit, take a look at the other side of the picture, sometimes people say, well, you know, I'm just doing my job, and, you know, I have to work, and I do my job, et cetera, et cetera. But what the example of that company does indicate is, well, I guess the person could have taken the position of saying, listen, I'm not doing it. This is just a business order. I'm not really responsible for how they use it. But he didn't. He said, no, I got a pretty sense of what's going on there, and I don't want to be part of it. Mm-hmm. So very interesting. And the same with the kind of some of the drug companies in refusing to ship some of those drugs. So I don't think it's always as simple as saying, well, you know, it's my job, I'm just carrying out my job. There is a way in which, you know, somebody says, well, wait a minute, I can think about what's going on and look at how that is going to play itself out.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So what do you say? Why don't we go to our first guest?
Sounds good.
Let's go to our actually person who was in the room, Tom Ertz, who is the Vice President of Operations at ShopRite Supermarket. Tom, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's an honor to be with you, Monsignor. Happy to do it.
Great. I'm delighted. And, I've just in terms of disclaimer, Tom and I have known each other for a number of years. Tom has been so generous in working on a number of different projects with us in Catholic Charities, a little bit outside of New York City, a little bit to the north and the west of New York City. But the reason we have Tom on the show today is kind of a little bit of our follow-up and denouement after the Pope's visit. So let me just set the stage a little bit that one of the visits and places that Pope Francis did go, he went to East Harlem, which is one of the neighborhoods in New York City, maybe about 5 miles or so north of, maybe not even that far, maybe about 3 miles north of where the United Nations is for our listeners throughout the country. And he went there to be with and to visit, to bless about 150 immigrants and refugees whom Catholic Charities is serving. And he met them in Friday afternoon, a few hours after he was at the United Nations. And we were just very blessed that Tom Ertz was able to be with us on that occasion. Tom, give us a little bit of your reaction to being in the room on last Friday afternoon.
Well, I have to tell you, Monsignor, it definitely was a life-changing experience for me and really one of the top 10 days of my life. You know, it started outside where we were gathering as we were waiting to go into to the gym, and, you know, the groups of people that were there, and they were present, you know, the, and some of them presented gifts to the Holy Father, as you know. And then watching them outside, the joy on their face, and just the way, the sense of energy that you felt on the street, people were just so anxious to see him. And just even the neighborhood, walking up to the school, this sense of joy, the sense of peace, the sense of how important this man's presence was to this neighborhood and how significant it was that he was coming to this area, you know, a pope who clearly has set the tone for not just talking the talk but walking the walk. So when we were inside the gym, you know, they had a couple of TV screens, and they started showing as he pulled up outside on the street. And that sense of surreal as you're watching TV, as many of us do, and watching many of the Pope's activities over the week he was in the United States and other times, it was this kind of feeling like, yeah, it's on TV, but he's outside. Like, he's right out there. And you could just hear, you could hear the noise of the crowd. And then as he passed into the classroom, one of the real moving points for me is, you know, because St. Francis has always held a very strong significance in my family, for lots of different reasons, and hearing the young men and women in the classroom behind me start singing, you know, Make Me an Instrument of Your Peace, this beautiful song about St. Francis, hearing it and then hearing it on TV and watching it and then hearing it, it was just a build-up like, he's actually behind us. This is actually going to happen. And I can't really describe the feeling other than it was just amazing sense of energy and calm and presence and a surreal nature to it.
We're speaking with Tom Ertz, who is the Vice President of Operations at ShopRite Supermarkets. And Tom was one of the guests who was in the room last Friday in East Harlem when Pope Francis met with 150 immigrants and refugees who are helped by Catholic Charities. And one of the reasons that Pope Francis went up there is because in every city that he went to, he really wanted to kind of see and experience and be with what the Catholic Church is doing in the various communities, what it's doing to outreach, what it's doing to help those in need. And so in New York, he basically went up and to this school in East Harlem, Our Lady Queen of Angels School, and he wanted to kind of get an experience to what is the church doing in terms of educating people, and what are they doing in terms of outreach, welcoming newcomers. And he got a perfect example of that. And as Tom kind of related to us, he first went into a classroom with about 48 students from various of the Catholic schools in East Harlem. And then he came into the auditorium right next door where he met with those immigrants and refugees who are being helped by Catholic Charities. So, Tom, you had a great view of it because actually, as you just described to our listeners, you could almost hear in the wall behind you when Pope Francis was in the classroom, because in the classroom, even though there was a big wall in the way, it probably wasn't more than, you know, 15 yards away from where you were actually sitting. So it was a real kind of compact area that he came to.
Yes, and it was a very intimate environment. You could definitely see the joy on the faces of the people. And, you know, and in his remarks, you know, which he gave most of his remarks in Spanish, but just the gentleness and the way he spoke, and, you know, in reading the remarks afterwards, talking to them about dreaming and talking of referencing Martin Luther King and how Jesus is in, you know, finding joy in your dreams and Jesus is in joy, and then asking them and giving them homework and asking them, please pray for me so I can continue to spread the joy of Jesus to others. And then at the end, he said it in English, and don't forget to do your homework. And it was just the power of that. And then he challenged a few people, anyone brave enough here to sing me a song? And a couple of young ladies from one of the tables just started singing to him. And it was just so beautiful how quiet it became and just his presence. And then afterwards, then, you know, we all shared in the Our Father, and he gave us a blessing. And it was a very, very special moment. And you could definitely see the impact that he made. And you could definitely feel the energy in the room. And just to be in his presence is just something I'll never forget.
Now, Tom, and again, I think, let me just say something very, very kind of specific and whatever. And I've said this in a variety of different places. I said that basically the Pope has the characteristics of being a rock star in a sense, and I think you get a sense of that. But what I've kind of said is, though, the scariest moment for me was kind of when he got on the plane and the door closed and he went home. And it was scary because now we had to figure out if we were going to not merely treat this as a big rock concert that we now go home and go about our business, or whether we were now going to take the experience, the messages, and figure out how we live it out, how we be more inclusive, how we serve better, how we do reach out to our neighbors in need. And so that, to me, it was a scary moment. But what I want to say to our listeners now, Tom and Tom's colleague were in the room, and they have been great partners of Catholic Charities in the past in helping us to kind of feed our neighbors in need. And what was very, very interesting to me and to our listeners, you know, when Tom and Dave were walking out of the room, Tom's colleague says to me, you know, we got to get busy now. We got to talk about how we're going to feed our neighbors better in this upcoming year than we did last year. So, Tom, that was, to me, a really important part of the trip.
Well, I definitely think, you know, the words of the Holy Father and the actions challenge us, right? And the question is, how do you react to that challenge? How are you or I or anyone else going to be different because of the experience that we've had? And I've had that thought process since that day, and really understanding, you know, you can, you know, and then Mother Teresa, I think, is the one who said it, if you can't feed 100 people, then feed just one. I think that's the message, is this call to action that you're referring to, Monsignor, and how you're going to be different based on being in the presence of the Holy Father or understanding the message he's trying to deliver. And I think it's important for everyone to understand everyone has a role, and there is no insignificant role. We, you know, can, like the widow with the one coin, make a big impact in somebody's life. And I'm proud to say, you know, working for ShopRite, part of our purpose is to care deeply about people and help them to eat well. And I think that plays out and partners very nicely with the Archdiocese and Catholic Charities in the Feeding Your Neighbors campaign, because, you know, in raising funds and raising food, always around the holiday time, it seems to be the most productive because it's top of mind. But you're right, Monsignor. I think the challenge is, how do we go out every day and continue to help and feed and clothe our neighbors?
You know, Tom, I do want to take a moment and talk a little bit about this. And, you know, if you were listening earlier before you came on, Tom Dobbins talked about, in a kind of a negative way, what one corporation in Germany did, where it didn't like the fact that its product was going to be used to maybe inflict real serious wounds and damage to people who were coming into the country because of the nature of the wire that was there. And kind of he wouldn't want his company doing that. But you know what, Tom, what I'd like you to spend a little bit of time, just a couple of minutes, talking about, you know, the way that ShopRite does reach out into the community and tries to help. Because, you know, one of the messages which I think, you know, Pope Francis tries to bring across in, you know, pardon me, I'm just going to say this, in a way that sometimes our political leaders don't quite get it as right. I mean, oftentimes when we talk about inequality in the world, that we kind of use it to divide whether 1%, 47%, how many, whatever the percentages are. What I think Pope Francis tries to do is to say, hey, we all got to do this together to make our world better, to make sure that people have what they need. So share with our listeners a little bit, Tom, some of the ways that ShopRite views itself as a partner in the communities where its supermarkets are.
Well, we believe that it's an honor to be a part of the communities in which we do business. And we feel if you were going to be a true community partner, there's other things other than sell groceries and provide wholesome food to our customers that we have to do. We have to partner with those in need in our community. So we do that in a lot of different ways. One of the ways we do that is our year-round hunger-fighting initiative, which is called our Partners in Caring initiative, in which through fundraising, through sale of some product from our partners at General Mills, we're able to support food bank dollars throughout many food pantries throughout the Hudson Valley area in which we do business. We also partner on a grassroots basis with a lot of local charitable organizations through some of the items that we donate on a local basis to make sure we're taking care of those in our backyard. Then in addition to that, the last year we partnered with the Archdiocese and Catholic Charities with the Feeding Your Neighbors campaign, in which we challenged our associates, who are some of the most spirited and passionate associates, and I'm so very proud of them, and through their efforts and the generosity of our customers.
Now, Tom, for the sake of our listeners, when you use the word associates, we would kind of think of them as the women and the men who kind of are the managers of the different supermarkets?
It would be them and our employees, you know, those that are on the front line dealing with our customers every day. You know, those are the folks that are, in addition to the leadership teams within our stores, which is our management team. And we kind of challenge them, as we like to do with these types of things. But it's very easy when you're talking about the hunger-fighting initiatives, because it's just people are just so passionate about helping those in their neighborhoods. And we were very honored that last year we were able to provide over 385,000 meals through the amount of food we collected, the amount of money we collected, which I think was over $90,000. And that food drive alone provided an additional 389,000 meals to people. And that's on top of the year-round hunger-fighting effort that we do.
Well, Tom, I just want to say thank you, and thank you for taking the time to be with us, and thanks for being in the room. That so many of our important partners and friends were there to experience Pope Francis interacting with those immigrants, those refugees, helped by Catholic Charities was just kind of made it even a special thing. And Tom, we will follow up to figure out how we can, you know, even build on that momentum to feed a few more people this upcoming year. So thanks for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome, Monsignor. Looking forward to it.
Tom Ertz, who is the Vice President of Operations at ShopRite Supermarkets and was one of those people in the room with Pope Francis last Friday in East Harlem. You know, I think we'll take a break now, and we'll come back in a couple of minutes. Just love. Just do it. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
The Catholic Channel. The Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, this is Just Love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. This is our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world and how people do things to make our world more just and more compassionate. We had a little visitor to the United States last week, Pope Francis, and we're kind of wrapping that up a little bit, but we're not only focused on kind of what's going on in the past. We just spoke with Tom Ertz, who was in the room with Pope Francis last Friday. But what we were talking about with Tom a little bit was how we're going to go forward now and try to feed even more hungry people, hopefully inspired a little bit by Pope Francis and being with him, so that, you know, we take that message of love and concern into the world. Tom, you got any other news that you want? Speaking of the world, we got anything about the United Nations that we want to talk about?
Absolutely, Monsieur. Now, I mean, as you know, this is United Nations Week.
Yeah, let me tell now to our listeners throughout the country, we want a little sympathy here in New York. Okay, we want a little sympathy. We had the Pope, we had the President, we had the head of the government of China, we had Putin here. You know what that means? If you live in New York, it means you don't get anywhere. That's what it means. I mean, it's bad enough. Sometimes you can't even walk anyplace. I mean, if you try to drive, you try to take a taxi cab, you really need to really do an examination of conscience if you can do that. But sometimes they even block streets and you can't even walk when all those people are going to place. So we're happy that they're here, and then we're happy when they go home.
Yes.
So anyway, Tom, tell us a little bit about what in particular were they focusing on at the United Nations?
Well, as you mentioned, Monsignor, this is the 70th regular session of the UN General Assembly. That was the reason that Pope Francis came. That was the reason the President was here and the other world leaders. And one of the things they concentrated on was to reexamine what was originally back in the year 2000 called the Millennium Development Goals. Back in the year 2000, the United Nations passed these Millennium Development Goals, which were eight goals that were tried to look at poverty, and they tried to see what would be achievable from the year 2000 to the year 2015 as regards poverty. And those goals are now up. One of the goals, in fact, that they decided on looking at was cutting extreme poverty in half as measured by the portion of people living on $1.25 a day. Actually, that goal was maintained. I mean, that goal, they were able to wind up getting that down in a measurable way. So now what we're doing is the United Nations came together this past weekend.
So, I mean, to our listeners, okay, because whenever you do these statistics things, it's hard to figure out. So the goal was that to cut in half the number of people who were living at a sub-poverty level?
Yes.
So let's just do it very simply, okay, without the commas and zeros. What it basically means, if you had 100 people in the world in the year 2000 who were living at really, really, really poor, the goal was by the year 2015 that there were only 50 people living really, really, really poor.
Exactly, Monsieur.
And that's they achieved it?
They did achieve it. Yeah, they did. Actually, they cut that one was cut in half. So what the United Nations did was they came together this past Saturday and they voted again on new goals. These are not the Millennium Development Goals. These are called the Sustainable Development Goals. And there are now 17 of those.
You know, let me interrupt, Tom, because I think this is absolutely critical for our listeners. OK, us, we do-gooders. OK, we kind of who are trying to help people. Oftentimes we get into a little bit of a cycle. And because we want people to know how much need there is and how much help is needed, we always talk about what's wrong, mm-hmm. okay? And we talk about the fact, you know, there are a lot of poor people in the world, there are people without housing, there are people who are discriminated against, and all of that's true. But sometimes I think we talk about it in such a way that we don't think we can ever do anything about it. So I think one of the things that's really, really good, it's good news that some of these development goals, they were achieved. And actually what we set before us to do, and I'm going to be real big, as a world, because that's what the United Nations does, basically it was achieved, and that's like good news to do that. So here's what I want you to do, Tom. Tom, give me the three biggies in terms of what we're supposed to do for these sustainability goals. Is this another 15-year plan or 10 years or how long?
It's another 15-year plan.
Okay, so what are the three biggies that the United Nations has kind of put before the world as we want to how we want to impact and make our world a better place in the next 15 years?
I would say probably the number one is zero hunger. And it ties in very much with what we were doing before, what we were talking about. So we want to end hunger and achieve food security and improve nutrition programs and sustainable agriculture across the world.
Okay. Now, let me pick on that one a little bit. Okay. Let me pick on that one.
Okay.
Because I don't think we're going to do it.
Mm.
Now, I mean, I think, you know, that one I think we're going to fail at because I still think we're going to have hungry people in the world. So, I mean, I like goals that you can achieve. So, I mean, I liked it if you said you're going to cut it in half or cut it by 75% or by 80%. But to eliminate every hungry person in the world, that's pretty good. That's pretty ambitious,
right,
to do it. Now, I mean, we should be trying, but we got to be a little bit realistic. But, you know, Tom, again, good news is if you look at what's going on in Africa, okay, the ability of a lot of Africa to grow more food because of some of the techniques, some of the attention that's been placed there to the arable land and the technology about how you can do crops that produce more, there's been even already a great impact in the amount of food that some places of Africa are growing.
Absolutely, Monsignor. No, for real. And I mean, I think, you know, I think you're right. I think some of these goals are ambitious. The UN kind of said that, and they set the bar high, I think, because we did manage to achieve the millenniums.
Right.
So maybe they set the bar even higher for these.
Okay, so one of those big goals is to get nobody to be hungry in the world. Good
right.
goal.
Right.
Second.
Second, I would say, is tied to that, clean water and sanitation. I think that's another very big goal. The United Nations is looking to ensure availability of sustainable management of water.
Tom, this is not a trick question, but it's kind of intriguing to me. You know what the current how many people or what percentage of the world, how many people currently don't have clean water and good sanitation?
I don't have the number in front of me, Monsignor. So, but I remember,
okay.
I know from when I personally went with Catholic Relief Services to Africa, that was Catholic Relief Services' number one mission, was to provide clean water to people. And because when you provide clean water, you take care of their health. I mean, there's all sorts of other ancillary things that you're
going to
take
care of. I got a little confession about how kind of some I'm ignorant on some of these things because I finally learned it, but that, like, don't they talk about potable water?
Yes.
Yeah. I always thought it was portable water that you could bring from one place, but it's not. It's potable,
no, it's
right?
Potable.
Which
it's potable.
Simply means, I think, drinkable.
Exactly.
Doesn't it?
Exactly.
Okay. Why don't they say drinkable?
It's too clear.
Okay. That's a good idea.
Well, too clear.
But potable water is supposed to be clear, right?
It is supposed to be clear, right? Okay. And clean. And that's I think when you go and you
all right,
actually
Tom, you got one more.
And the one more I think is the climate change one, Monsignor. And this is one that that Pope Francis actually addressed the United Nations regarding.
You know, somebody might say he's got a thing on this because he talks about it a lot, right?
He does.
He
talk
wrote
about
a biggie on
big,
it, right?
A lot. And for as far as climate change goes, what the Pope is basically saying is, as you may be aware, this coming early December, from December 1st to December 11th, there's going to be a big conference on United Nations Climate Change Summit in Paris.
Right.
And this is where basically everyone's going to come together, and most countries have already made a pledge that on how they will be able to reduce the carbon emissions in their country to kind of keep the ability of the world from warming up beyond 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit.
So how are we doing with regard to the United States and China? Have we two countries signed on yet?
The United States already has a plan, and yes, we are ready and prepared. We've presented our plan, and China just last week, Monsignor, presented its plan.
All right.
And they're doing okay. The only country that's an outlier so far is India, and India has promised that there will be a plan by this weekend.
Okay, pretty good, pretty good. So let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll speak with David Gibson, who's going to give us a lot of nice insights about the Pope's trip. We're going to ask him for some tidbits that haven't made all the mainstream reports. So stay tuned, because we're going to learn a little bit from David Gibson, who's one of the really sharpest analysts and journalists who covers a lot of different religious topics. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. And our world will be a more compassionate and a more just place. Well, we're doing a little bit of debriefing on Pope Francis. And if people aren't too pooped out about the Pope, then we're going to continue to have a little bit of conversation about that. You know, so much went on and so many people saw so much and people wrote about it and people analyzed it. I'm just so delighted that David Gibson, the national reporter at Religious News Service, agreed to be with us, because I know that David has covered a lot of different things and I know that a lot of people want to hear David's insight. So I'm just absolutely delighted that he's taken the time to be with us. David, thank you so much for joining us on Just Love.
Great to be here.
You're not pooped at the Pope?
You have no idea. If listeners are only listening with one ear, that's okay, because I only have half a brain. I don't know about you.
Well, David, your half brain is better than most people's full brain. So we're grateful that you're here.
Oh, it's terrific. I mean, it was an amazing week, you know, as you know, and as you've been talking about. But it was really so intense, and it really, you know, it doesn't end.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been news kind of coming out of that, but also, you know, we're heading into the Synod. I'll be going to Rome next week as well for a couple of weeks. So it's a remarkable time in the Church.
Now, I know to cover a Pope's visit, you don't have to be at anything because all of it is covered and you can kind of read what he's going to say and what he did say. Did you actually get to be physically at any of the events that he was at?
Yeah, no, I was there, except for the mass in Philly, you know, the big events in the street, you know, on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. No, in fact, it was really, it's one of those things that was so because of security,
right.
Which, you know, all of us kind of ground our teeth at a bit, I'm sure, here and there. It was necessary evil, I guess, at
right.
the times. It was really, you know, I was mainly in the press center and watching from, you know, close, but I wasn't at the specific events. We had reporters on the scene, and I was kind of writing stuff up off of the, you know, off of the talks and whatnot. The scene in Philly was remarkable, wonderful, you know, also frustrating. I mean, when you try and bring off those kinds of things, or just, you know, thousands of people, even with tickets, trying to get in, which just, you know, it was remarkable. Everybody, it just came off so well. Everybody kind of took it in stride, even if they were, you know, it was very difficult, heartbreaking at some point.
But, well, you know, somebody commented, David, the event that I was actually only at one event when he came up from the UN to East Harlem, and he visited with about 150 immigrants and refugees whom Catholic Charities was serving. Somebody commented to me it was the most well-behaved group of politicians they have ever seen in a room together. That
I know. It really was. I think it was a good testimony. Everybody was on their best behavior for the Pope.
Yep, they were.
That was really... I know you've been talking about this, but I think it was really just watching it, the sort of way things developed. And I think even the Pope mentioned this on his in-flight press conference on the plane back to Rome. I was not on the plane, but you know, talking about just kind of the tenor of the trip, and you could see it as it went on. You know, the events in Washington were, you know, they were great, but they were kind of formal. You know, the Congress, the White House, there was the Catholic Charities thing there. But, you know, when he would have events like yours where he was with people, frankly, you know,
yeah.
and especially the marginalized, it really energized him. And you saw there was that. I think it was from that, after the United Nations talk, you know, and
right.
Friday morning in New York. You know, it started to become a more personal kind of event, and you really, we all thought in the press room he was really looking tired. It was going to be tough. He got energized as it went along, and it was really evident at those events in Philadelphia.
Yeah, and it was. I mean, I can tell you, it was interesting to me, and I just share a little personal thing with you. When he kind of walked into that room with the immigrants and refugees, he walked in a very low key way, with, you know, rather. I would say a taciturn kind of walking in there. Mm-hmm. But as the first people he met were some of the kids who had fled Central America. And when he got over to them, because they had on their soccer jerseys and they gave him one, then he began to get animated, and he began to get enthused about being there. And, you know, when they, you know, kicked around the soccer ball and did some soccer trips, then, you know, he began to get engaged in his meeting with the individuals who were there.
Yeah, really, really true. And again, this isn't just nice Pope, nice man.
Right.
You know, there's a message there. I mean, right. you know, he honestly responds to that. And you know, he's not a guy built for the bubble. You know,
right.
security and the whole thing. So obviously he responds on a personal level. He needs to be there with people. But again, you know, he's sending a message here to all of us, certainly to the church. He sent that through and through by what he did and what he said. You know, let's identify with the outsider. We need to get out of the church. You know, that is such a central theme since the conclave that elected him. You know, John Allen, the great Vaticanista, the Vatican
right.
used to be at NCR, now, you know, Crux, the Boston Globe thing. He used to have a book and a kind of a theme about the upside-down church, about the demographics of the church globally are moving to the Southern Hemisphere, to Africa, Latin America, and Asia. But I think in many respects, with Francis, we've also got the inside-out church. You know, he talks about that image of Jesus knocking on the door, but because he's locked inside the church, and he wants to get out. And that was, I mean, you just saw that in everything he said. You know, it's just not, it's not a narrow faith. It's not us. It's not all about us. Get out into the street, accompany the, whoever it might be, whether you agree with them or not.
You know, David, I think you've articulated that so well. That is a leitmotif theme of his time as the Bishop of Rome, that basically that the church is, I don't want to say more important, but it certainly is as important and maybe on occasion more important what religious people do outside of houses of worship than what they do inside of them. And I think he structures the way he does things in a way that communicates that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it, but it's also, I think it's one of the things actually he's saying, and what he's saying to individuals and what he's saying to the church is you become, the church becomes its true self by leaving itself. Again, it's what Christ did, you know, going up on the cross, you abandon yourself. And, you know, it's, you remain locked inside. I mean, before he came, he had this, you know, he said this so many times, but he said, you know, church, it's just concerned with itself, might just as well be a museum.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. He's like, you only become the church by going out. And that message, you know, that's a, sounds like it's a, to Catholics, yes, but he was also talking to Americans and to, you know, this indifference. He was really diagnosing our culture of just this kind of laxness and apathy and indifference and the whole thing. He's like, no. It's like, you know, when you give of yourself, when you go out and do something for somebody, you... that's how you find actual fulfillment.
You know, somebody told me and that the phrase he used at the end of his, I guess it was his homily in Cuba, where he said, I'll say it in English. He basically, and it's a little controversial how it gets translated. He said, if you don't live life to serve, then life is not worth living, or you're not fit to live. I've had like four or five different conversations with people who've translated that in a variety of ways to me, but that they told me that that was a very, very strong phrase that he used about how if you don't serve with your life, it's not too much worth living.
Yeah, and he could say that about, you know, the church. I mean, he's not, you know, all these institutions and things. He says these things come and go. You know, they have their time, and we've got to do something different. I mean, he was just, and again, this doesn't, you know, everybody's trying to saddle him for their own agenda. It doesn't mean that, you know, he's going to do X, Y, Z, or he's going to do A, B, C, or he's going to do this. But, you know, he was so clear. He was talking to the bishops in Philadelphia, the bishops from around the world, not the U.S. He had a separate meeting with the U.S. bishops in Washington. Really interesting talk, you know, really poetic. You know, again, it was as poetic as it was kind of prescriptions. You know, he was saying, again, we have to draw by attraction. We have the church like, and the family has to be like the hearth, the warm hearth of the fire and draw people in. But, you know, he was really saying that you can't, he was talking about the early apostles to the bishops in from around the world gathered for the World Meeting of Families in Philadelphia. And he said, you know, we needed, you know, when the early apostles said, you know, we need people to go out and do these works of service, which is what we're all about. And they came up with the diaconate, with deacons. You know?
Yeah.
And he just said in this kind of laughing sort of way, it's like, you know, we just need to do it. He's very practical. It's like,
yeah,
you know, there's nothing against doctrine. You know, he joked that Cardinal Mueller of the Congregation of the Doctrine of Faith was there. He said, Cardinal Mueller is here to make sure I don't say anything heretical. But he said, you know, it's basically, you know, get out and do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like blah, blah, blah. We're talking. Let's get out and do it. And that's the message he wanted to leave with people.
David Gibson is the national reporter at Religious News Service and has covered extensively Pope Francis's trip to the United States, among other things. So, David, let me ask you, any couple of things that either happened or he said or that occurred that you said, I wasn't quite expecting that, or that's something that I'm going to store in the back of my head as something a little bit special that I think we got to pay a little bit more attention to down the road a bit?
Well, there were two things. I mean, this is a little bit abstract, but not too much. I mean, just from my own sort of religion writer, theological point of view. I mean, he said so many wonderful things. And, you know, and again, we're writing all today about his meeting, secret meeting that's coming out with Kim Davis, the Kentucky County clerk, you know, who's and, you know, what he meant by that is unclear. The Vatican's not commenting. It was, you know, he also saw the Little Sisters of the Poor. You know, he's clearly sending signals every which way of not that he's endorsing one particular agenda or not, but that he's, again, trying to reach all sides. Everyone is welcome. So, you know, it's important not to read too much specifics into it except for the larger message, I think. But it was really interesting, his call for an abolition of the death penalty before Congress, which and also his talk to the United Nations when he talked about the right of the environment. These are two things, you know, talked about the created world and almost a human right of the environment. We asked Father Lombardi, the Vatican spokesman, if these two things were developments of doctrine and that the Pope is pushing. And he said yes, it's new, something new here, in the sense that, you know, the Catechism says, you know, Pope John Paul II said, you know, there's really no, you know, no scenario in which the death penalty could be legitimated, but it was still on the books as something that could possibly, you know, could be justified in some circumstances by the state. Pope Francis seems to be wanting to end that. Fascinating, because, you know, people are always talking about, does the church change? Some people say, no, nothing changes. Other people say everything can change. Well, this is a real example before our eyes of how we can develop and we can deepen our understanding.
You know, and I do think a book that should be on everybody's reading is John Noonan's book, The Church That Can and Cannot Change.
Absolutely.
I mean, and you know, if you look at, and again, I mean, you know, as somebody once said to me, if you're looking for any type of change in what the church is doing, it usually begins with the phrase, as we have always taught or as we have always done. That's somebody once told me that was the hermeneutic, the way you understood that what was coming might be a little bit different than what have been done in the past.
Exactly. It's that's exactly it. And there's such a, you know, there's such a fear, look, you know, change and the whole thing. But, you know, what Francis is saying is, again, not that anything goes or everything goes at all. He said, we just have to be not be afraid. Mm-hmm. Go out. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. You know, and again, he lists himself first. And that's, again, what he was doing, I think, through so much of this. Take some risks. Take a leap of faith. Commitment. The family. You know, he was just so, again, poetic and so poignant in talking about how we've lost this kind of willingness to take a leap, you know, a vocation of any kind, whether it's to, you know, a religious calling or to marriage or to the other person. Just start with that. He also talked very much about the little way, which he always does. You know, this is all this grand visit and all these grand ideas we're talking about. But he wants to say, look, this isn't hard. This is just do something, say something nice to everyone you meet, if you see someone in need, if you see someone hurting.
Well, you know, my favorite part of that huge tome on which wasn't really on the climate, although everybody thought it was on climate. It was about how does everybody get developed together, poor people, the world, nature, all of that. But that begins. My favorite part of that was my translation of it, okay? You know, if you want to do your part, turn down the air conditioning. It doesn't have to be as high as you want, and maybe sweat a little bit, and that'll be your little part to making us use less energy.
I know, and you know how many people were upset at that.
I know.
It's silly. It's like they're saying, how can he tell us? It's like, I mean, his point is, that's just one small thing. If you can't, and I was sort of, my reaction to that was, if you can't do that, if you can't turn the air conditioning, you know, a couple degrees up higher, you know, where are we at?
Yeah.
That we cannot be moved from our comfort zone, even a degree or two.
You know, I will tell you two things, David, what you talked about. I think in some ways it's interesting. I think somehow he's figured out how to do things that should offend people, but they don't really offend them too much. I mean, he's done it in a way that is whatever. And I do think what you kind of commented is, in a meeting meeting and visiting Little Sister. You know, symbols and signs are not exactly the same as dogmatic proclamations. And sometimes you just got to let them be out there and see which way they go. And you know, you don't have to parse every single piece of it. And I think that's what he's brilliant at. I mean, when he said, you know, the probably the most famous, I guess, four words of his entire pontificate, at least from the point of the United States, is, "Who am I to judge?" Mm-hmm. Well, I loved that everybody knew what he meant. I don't know what he meant, but I mean, let's just let it out there. And, you know, maybe it's a little call to all of us to be a little bit less judgmental. And so I think that is his genius in his, you know, saying things and doing things that, you know, can gradually take root in a way that makes us a better church and a better world.
Yes, absolutely. And the thing is, and I think the great appeal, the key to it, everybody says, why is he so appealing? He starts with himself,
right?
And he starts with the church. He's not wagging his finger, and that's what he was telling the bishops. It's like, don't go blaming this and that and saying everything was better before. This is the world we have. We are the ones, you know, we need to go out. We can't be telling them what to do. We have to look at ourselves first, and we have to go accompany those people. Just don't point at their moral failings. Look at the entire person.
Yeah. You know, the two the two pieces that I would comment that really got me. The one was, I think, and I didn't read it super carefully, but when he basically said, and I think it was to the bishops, he said, you know, don't just keep repeating the same explanations over and over again that people aren't getting. Engage people, be friends with them, talk to them, rather than just repeating the explanation. And I got to tell you, I mean, I've heard so many people use the same explanations over and over again, and they're not getting through. And I thought he just kind of really hit the nail on the head in that particular comment that he made.
No, that's absolutely right. I think, you know, it's sort of going in your door and coming out his door. Again, it's not, this isn't a threat to the faith, you know, to be this way and to engage people, you know, even if you disagree with them, you know, on levels. I mean, you had all those public figures he was going to talk to. Did he agree with all of them on every issue? No, not at all. But again, this is also the message. This is a message to Catholics, but he took that message to Congress as well.
The other thing which I'm just going to say to you and something share with you what I felt. And different than some of the with the visits of Pope John Paul II and the Bishop of Pope Benedict, I felt we have our first American Pope. And I think, well, we actually do have our first American Pope, but those of us from North America think that we are America and the United States is American. But I always felt when he was talking to us as one of us. It was recognizing our strengths and maybe encouraging us to do better. I said, this really is an American Pope, even from South America.
It's really true. It's also, I have to say, you know, everyone's got their interpretation, but I also frankly think he was calling us back to our better angels.
Yeah.
To our true selves. You know, there's a sense of, I mean, a lot of what he was saying, I mean, there were some harsh critics, George Will, others, you know, who almost intimated that Catholicism, that old canard Catholicism, is not compatible with being an American. But the things he was talking about, the compromise, dialogue, promoting the common good, these are basic American principles that, frankly, we've probably lost sight of that. I mean, look who he cited. Martin Luther King, Abraham Lincoln, Dorothy Day, Thomas Merton. Someone called that the Pope's Mount Rushmore of America.
That's right.
I mean, that just stop and ponder that a little bit and what they mean and what they say and what the Pope was talking about.
Hey, David, thanks so much for not being too pooped out by the Pope to spend a little bit of time sharing your insights with us and with our listeners. And thanks for what you do to kind of make the message of the church, make it a little bit more understandable so that we can kind of grasp it a little better. So thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Monsignor. Take care.
David Gibson, who is a journalist, and he is with the National Report. He's a national reporter at the Religious News Service. So I think we have, you know, I think we've had a good summary of the Pope.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm so glad that he came. I'm so glad that so many people had to see him. And, you know, now we got a job to do. We got to go out and listen to the message. We have to be engaged. We have to invite people to kind of share and to go forth. And that's a critically important thing that we do. And, you know, as I said, you know, once before, it can be a little scary because he's set a pretty high bar in terms of engagement. Now we got to go forth and do it. So I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. Join us when we come back again next week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.